Welcome into the MRMC Doctor's Office program on our Tuesday morning. This is, I don't want to say like old times again, but it sort of is. Well, the MRMC Doctor's Office program, Diana Taylor with us, the Healthy Families America Supervisor with the Randolph County Health Department. That's a big title, isn't it?
It is, but it's something I'm very comfortable with, and I'm very passionate about our Healthy Families program. I've been working with home visitation for most of the time, most of my 25 years that I've been at the health department, and it's something that I've seen firsthand, the positive benefits of home visitation.
All right. Let's go back in time. How did you get to work for the health department for the first time? Because this happened, what, 2 or 3 years ago, Diana?
Yeah. I celebrated 25 years in February. So I had been the director of a church preschool, and I had an opportunity to apply for a job as a nutrition educator with WIC at the health department.
Which is how we met.
Yes, exactly. And it was just kind of a spur of the moment application, and I interviewed with Leona Greer, who's still there, and we hit it off, and I was hired, and then she left for a while, and I became the WIC coordinator, and then I added home visitation duties, and I worked with home management, and I did become the administrator for a short period of time before I decided that my family needed me a little bit more than I needed to work full time. So for about the last year, I took a few months off, and now I'm semi-retired, and I work part-time at the health department.
So between yourself and Leona and Sharon and some of the other folks, there's a bunch of experience there, isn't there?
There is. A lot of it started about the same time. Sharon, I think, was a few months behind me. Pamela Rouse, who's the administrative assistant, she started a few months after I did. And it just, we kind of got hooked at the health department, and they couldn't get rid of us.
Do you like the new building, too?
I do. It is much more professional feeling and clean. The utility bills are much cheaper, and there's room to spread out. I don't feel like when we take people on a tour, we have to apologize for the peeling paint and the water-stained ceilings and, you know, the smell of must. And so, yes, we are very happy where we are.
Did you ever get lost in that old Woodland Hospital?
There was places I wouldn't even go. I was up on the third floor. We had some storage there, and it was really not a good place to be. And then we stored some records in our lower level, our basement, and there again, it was not a, yeah. The staff tried to avoid the higher and the lower levels at the health department.
Yeah, I went through it right before it sold and went through the old operating rooms. That could be a little spooky, couldn't it?
And they still had the smell of anesthesia on the green tiled walls. It was kind of creepy. But we're done with that, and we have some bright places to work now. And if you haven't been there, come on out and give us a look. It's still a work in progress. We're still working on getting it exactly how we want it, but it is a much nicer place to work with.
All right. One thing that is so cool about the health department, of course, it's here to serve everyone in Randolph County. Our daughter, Emma, who you know and have known forever, going to be
since
a senior.
She was born.
Really? And she needed a vaccine going into her now senior year, which is pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
So I called and said, hey, can we stop by and get this done? So come on in right now, and in and out in 15 minutes, it was all taken care of.
Some things you have to have an appointment for, but immunizations are not. We don't want to put any barriers in front of people getting immunized. In fact, I was talking to Kara, one of our health educators, before I came, and she said, remind people of back-to-school shots, which
wait until August.
Exactly. I thought, wait a minute, the kids just got out of school. We're not going to want to talk about this. But kindergartners need shots before they enter kindergarten. They need another shot before they enter eighth grade, and also before their senior year, which is what Emma got. But you were smart not to wait until August to get that done, because it gets pretty crazy.
And here's something to think about for all these parents, too, who have kids that need the immunization. Kids know they need it, too. Get it over and done with now so they're not stressing out about it throughout the whole summer.
That's exactly right. And we do have a good, experienced staff, and they try to make it as painless as possible. So I would encourage you, if your child needs shots or if you need shots, to visit us at the health department.
All right. Best one I ever had, I had a pneumonia vaccine there 20 years ago. Best shot I ever had. Never felt a thing.
Well, that's good. That's what we hope they're all like. So not everybody experiences that, but really, I think it's more the fear of needles than it actually is the pain.
All right. Here's the only tough question I'm going to ask you all day. What's it like working for Sharon now?
Well, you know, I don't see her very much. She's so busy, but she's got great experience, and, you know, she's known all over the state as being an expert in financial matters with health departments, so she brings a wealth of knowledge and experience. I don't think there's anything in the health department that she isn't familiar with and doesn't understand, so that's a real advantage for us.
So what is the Healthy Families Program?
The Healthy Families Program is evidence-based home visiting program. We send family support specialists into homes of families that might be at risk for adverse childhood experiences, and we work with them strength-based and to build relationships with them to encourage them to have real family-centered homes. So the idea is to prop up these families and help them in any way we can when they're just becoming parents.
So how's it the same? You know where I'm going with this. How is it the same and how is it different from parents as teachers?
Well, we work with parents as teachers closely. Their parents as teachers is on our advisory board, and I'm on their advisory board. So we're not in competition with them. We are a little more intensive than they are. In fact, for the first 6 months of an infant's life, we visit weekly, and you know, that's just kind of the way the program's set up. So they are a little bit more targeted toward the child, and we're a little more targeted toward the parents, although you can't visit a family and not have overlap in those areas. But we both want the same things, to have healthier families all around, mentally, physically, emotionally.
How valuable is it to have someone come into the home who's a new parent and say, hey, you're doing this right, maybe you need to look at this, just to be there to support them?
You know, I think about when I was a first-time mom, and I really feel like I could have used the help, because no matter what you think you know when you become a parent, when you bring that baby home for the first time, it's a frightening experience. And a lot of the moms we work with, they don't have a support system. Maybe they were raised in foster care, or maybe they never had a parent or a mother or a father that were around. So it's really important. It's important to give them confidence you can do it. And we're kind of part cheerleader, part friend, part parent, part educator.
Because really, I know exactly what you're saying. Our son's now almost 23. But as a first-time parent, you're scared to death of what's going on with your child. Whether, is this normal? Is this not normal? You don't know what's going on.
Exactly. And a lot of people are hesitant to call their medical provider. I know I had called my pediatrician with a question about a rash when my daughter was born, and he kind of scoffed at me, and I was embarrassed. And you know, you just sometimes you hesitate to reach out to a physician. So we're kind of the go-between. I mean, we're not physicians or nurses necessarily in the program, but we can guide them based on the experience we have. This, you know, you need to see a physician for this instance, or this is normal. But it's all about building relationships with the family and how important it is to have that family be able to trust you and depend on you.
And I'll be graphic here if I can. Little things like, you can't medically say that diarrhea goes along with teething, but
For some reason, physicians will always tell you that that has nothing to do with it. But in my experience, it happened with all the time when my children were teething. But the same way with fevers, they say fevers aren't caused by teething. But it's kind of, sometimes we are the instruction manual book that people used to depend on their grandparents and parents, but now, because of our mobile society, we aren't always have access to parents and grandparents that would pass down these words of wisdom. And frankly, sometimes things have changed for the better, and what grandma would tell you to do isn't necessarily what's recommended anymore.
You mean put the whiskey in the...
Yeah. You know. That and, you know, safe sleeping. I mean, safe sleeping, children should be on their back in a crib with nothing else. So a lot of parents, a lot of grandparents were taught to put babies on their stomach so if they spit up. But they know now through a lot of research that it's much healthier to put the baby on their back with nothing. No bumper pads, no stuffed animals, no quilts in the crib.
All right, Diana Taylor's with us. Is the toughest thing to tell a new parent when you're putting your child to bed, you got to let them cry?
That is hard. No parent likes to hear their child cry. And we do have some educational information on purple crying, where we kind of train to tell the difference between crying when a child is in distress versus just crying because, you know, they are lonely or are sleepy or something like that. So it is tricky. It's tricky. And one of the things we work with is parenting cues, for parents to pick up on the cues that their babies are giving them. Sometimes babies don't want to be stimulated, and if the parent's stimulating them, the child will get fussy. So we try to work with parents to teach them those cues to pick up on. So that's kind of one of the secrets of becoming appropriate parent, is to learn those cues and what the cues mean. Each child is different in the cues that they give out.
And by the way, Diana, new mom and dad are sleep deprived anyway, so any advice you can give them tends to help, because a lot of times you may not be thinking completely clearly.
Well, you know, in serious cases, when a child maybe is colicky and cries and cries and cries and cries, it can lead to a great amount of frustration on the parents. So in those cases, if you know your child's been fed and you know they're comfortable and the temperature's right and you know they have a dry diaper and there's absolutely nothing else you can think of to do, if you've tried cuddling and rocking and they're still crying, put them in the bed. Go in the other room, close the door for a while, because we don't want parents to get to the point where their frustration and anger reaches a peak where they possibly will take it out on the baby. So if all else fails, make sure the child is safe and you can walk away for a while to make you have a sane moment and just take a little breather from the baby.
Is that one thing you tell parents too? Hey, a couple especially, you need some alone time.
Yes, that is important. If you don't take care of yourself, it's hard to take care of someone else. But a lot of new parents, especially mothers, tend to kind of drop off of what's important to them and just concentrate on the baby. But if the mom's not happy, the baby's not happy. So we really need to take care of ourselves. Self-care is very important in becoming a parent.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about what these visits are like, but how important is it for the parent of a newborn child to don't make your house as quiet as you can?
Well, you know, people go back and forth on this, and I've read both ways, that you should have a quiet house so the baby can sleep, but you shouldn't make it so quiet that they don't get used to sleeping. When I was a young mother, they would tell you to vacuum while the baby was asleep, and I could never bring myself to do that because I didn't want to risk waking a baby up. But it is important. The environment of the baby is important. They should be in a calm, quiet place if possible, but maybe not so quiet. You can play soft music, but a lot of times babies have that startle instinct, and if there's loud, sudden noises, it will wake them and startle them. So I always try to avoid that if possible.
So how does someone get involved with this program?
Well, there are requirements for the program. They have to live in Randolph County, and they have to be income eligible. And to be income eligible, they have to be eligible for Medicaid or WIC. They don't have to be on those programs, but they have to be eligible. We're looking for first-time parents between the ages of 18 and 24. That's what we're targeting. And we'd really like to admit them during their pregnancy, but if we miss getting them on the program during their pregnancy, then for sure before the baby's 3 months of age. And that is a national requirement of the program.
So do you see a lot of families right now?
Right now, we're seeing about 14 families. We have just hired a new part-time family support specialist, and we're still training her. So we're hoping to grow the program in the next few months, where we have additional families for her to see. And this is something that's a little bit different than parents as teachers, as we have a smaller caseload because we do have such intensive visits. So we're not at maximum capacity, and we can take referrals. A lot of times we get referrals through our WIC program. But if someone's interested and they meet those specifications, then they can call the health department and ask for healthy families, and we'll talk to them about getting on the program.
And I imagine we should point out too, don't be ashamed of this. You're just getting some support here.
Oh yeah. It's actually quite a benefit for the families, because another thing that we do is hook them up to resources in the community. And a lot of times we can facilitate that if they're having trouble, maybe getting in to see a physician or some kind of other services. Sometimes if someone else calls, we we can facilitate that a little bit. So we have had some great success in our programs. We've had some graduates that have gone on to finish college, and we've had moms that have gone back to finish high school, get their GED. So we are very proud of our, we have a very high retention rate. I can't tell you the percent right now, but it tends to be once we admit a family to the program, they stay on until their child turns three, which is when the program ends for the family.
So what happens, Diana, during a typical home visit? And you were saying they happen weekly now.
Well, weekly for the first 6 months. A typical home visit would be that the family support specialist would go in, and a lot of times we do have curriculum that we use, like maybe the second month we take information on teething and rolling over, but that isn't always what the family needs. So they try to be prepared with meeting the family where they are. So maybe we go into the family and we have this information we want to share with them, but the family's in some kind of crisis. Maybe their water shut off, or maybe the baby didn't sleep all night and has colic, or maybe the mom is sick. So we are very adaptable to change what we're going to talk about with the family to meet their needs. So it's a support, and we work on building relationship and being there for the mother and the father. And the visits try to reflect that.
I was about to say, do you try and get mom and dad together?
It's very, very important to us that the dad is involved in the visit. So we do work to try to include the father. We don't want to be one of these programs that just focuses on the mother, because the father is such an instrumental part in raising a baby. And I think you're going to see more information about that. It's become a important initiative for the Department of Health to include fathers, and we've just done a long survey on how our program responds to fathers. So I think we're going to be even doing more positive action to get fathers involved.
And how valuable, even on the very basic level, is it just to have some adult conversation for the mother and father?
Yeah, I think that is very important, and it's important. Sometimes our support workers or counselors, I mean, they're not trained in counseling, but, you know, when the parents, maybe they're having a spat about something, and it's just kind of somebody to talk to and somebody that will listen to them. It's as important that they know how to listen as well as they know how to share information. So the listening is a very crucial part.
All right, here's your real difficult question. How tough is it to have to see the babies?
Well, you know, there is a bright spot in every job. And watching the baby grow and develop is just, it's like a flower opening up right before your eyes. Even in a week's time from visit to visit, you go and the baby maybe has rolled over or started smiling, or maybe a toddler started talking. And those are things that you just, to be able to share that with a family is invaluable.
Okay, I'll date myself here again. I know one of the board members at the health department is Karen Birding, who's been a good friend forever, and she was PAT coordinator in Moberly for a long time. I think she got tired of me coming up to her and saying, look at what Ramey has done.
Well, you know, I taught preschool for 8 years, and I still see my preschool graduates in the community, and I feel proud. And the same way with WIC, I still see people that were on the WIC program, and I have to smile that now they're parents. And it's important to know that you have a piece of that, and you have an investment made in these families. And Karen is still active. She is on our board, like you said, and she's on our advisory board, and she is a wonderful asset to have. She has just such a gift of knowing how to share her information with people. She's an amazing person.
But how cool is it to see a parent who's so excited about what the kid's doing?
Oh, I mean, we couldn't ask for anything more than that. If you can get parents to that point where they're excited about what their child's doing, then your job is really much easier. It's the parents that, you know, maybe aren't as engaged with their children that we are more concerned about. But everybody wants to be a good parent, and that's kind of the premise that we start with. So some parents just might need a little more guidance than others.
So Diana, give us some advice. So what are some of the things new parents should be aware of? What should they do when they bring their child home?
Well, you know, that sleeping is so important. I'm on the Child Fatality Review Board, and we've had way too many meetings where a child has passed away, and we're trying to think of, you know, different things that we can do to help prevent that. So it's important that when you bring a child home that you have them in a safe crib, a safe crib or a play yard. And they should be on a fairly firm mattress and sleep on their back. There should not be any fancy padding in it or comforters. I know you see that and it's very cute for a child, but the stuffed animals, all that stuff needs to be out of the crib. The baby needs to be sleeping flat on its back. And if the temperature's cool, which it really should be fairly cool, put a footed sleeper on the baby and don't put comforters or blankets in there. Because what can happen is they can get those over their face and they lack what they need to stay alive. So sleeping is a really important thing. And if you're having struggling with feeding your baby, of course, we very much promote breastfeeding and the importance of breastfeeding. But you might check out the WIC program because WIC will give you information on how to feed your baby and how to stay healthy as a mother. And I'm a big proponent of reading to your children. If you can't, I mean, if you don't feel comfortable reading, talk to them, sing to them, tell them stories and poems. Everybody can do that. And that helps their brain development.
All right, let's hit the controversial subject as we wind down the program. Some moms and dads want to put the baby in the bed with them.
Right. You know, as a health professional, I have to recommend against doing that. And I know this is very controversial, especially in the breastfeeding world, because if you breastfeed, it does reduce your chances of your child dying from unsafe sleep. But I think to be on the safe side, I would really encourage parents, the crib, the safe crib is where the babies need to sleep. And the bed is where the parents need to sleep. And we've had too many cases where children have been in a water bed or in a soft bed or with covers on them, or they've been trapped between the bed and the wall or been suffocated by a parent accidentally when they're sleeping. So I just think, you know, you just need to get a baby used to sleeping in their own crib, even if they have to fuss a little bit. And I know you're tired, close the door. I mean, they actually are recommending now that the crib be in the parent's room. And if you have room available for that, that's the best case scenario. The baby sleeps in the crib next to your bed, and you can put your hand through the rail and stroke them and let them know you're there. But definitely they should not be in the bed with the parent.
Okay, here's my public service. It's perfectly normal for mom or dad in the middle of the night when they get up and go to the bathroom to look in the room and just listen for their child breathing.
Very normal. I don't know any parent that hasn't done that. And sometimes babies breathe shallow and you have to go actually touch them to make sure that
so they're... So I'm normal? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Or put your hand over their mouth to feel the air going. So, I think a parent, I would bet almost every parent in the world has done that at least once.
Okay. So, Diana, how can folks get information about the Healthy Families program?
Well, our general number is 660-263-6643. And they can ask for the Healthy Families program. We also have some information in the waiting room. If they're on WIC, they can talk to WIC about getting on the program. But we're really looking for women during their pregnancy because we do offer a lot of support during the pregnancy and helping women prepare for the birth of their babies.
I'm guessing you can help navigate them through that myriad of services that are out there for them, too.
Yes. And it's a shame, but a lot of the services they have to go out of town for, but we try to keep them in Moberly as much as we can for services.
All right. Has it been enjoyable? Have you had fun doing this?
Oh, very much so. This is where my passion lies, WIC and Healthy Families and helping families and helping create a community of healthy, educated, smart kids is something that it's really rewarding to me.
All right. Hey, Diana, thanks so much. This went by quick.
It did. It was a very fast 20 minutes or half an hour.
Okay. Diana Taylor has joined us today with the Randolph County Health Department. She's joined us on the MRMC Doctor's Office program.